Tonight we want to pick up with Romans chapter 1 and verse 28. If you were with us last week, we focused in on Romans 1, 26 and 27, where Paul has to say a lot about sexual sin. I do want to back up just a little bit and remind us as far as some of the key points that Paul has made in Romans 1. Talking about the Gentiles, he said, number one, they hindered the truth. They tried to chain it down. Number two, he talked about the lusts, and that's not just sexual lust, but the lusts, the fleshly desires that they had. He talked about the fact that the Gentiles, they wanted uncleanness, that filthiness. He said they dishonored their bodies. He said they exchanged the one true God for that which is corruptible. They got to the point where they wanted to serve and worship the creature rather than the Creator. Then he said that God finally gave them up. Well, that sounds pretty bad. Then you get down to what we talked about last week as far as the males and the females, sexual sin. Paul said that they were both guilty. And you would think, well, move on to something else, Paul. But he doesn't. He has more to say about sin. I passed out the sheet tonight because there are a lot of words in Romans 1. I did this study some years back, but I wanted to share it with you. And look at the words individually because each word is significant. Before we get there, though, let's start with Romans chapter 1 and verse 28. Three key words here. And even as they, once again the Gentiles, refused to have God in their knowledge, a second key word, God gave them up to a reprobate mind to do the things which are not fitting. When you look at the preceding material, verses 27 and 28 would be good as illustrations of this. You could go back to 26 as well. There are some things which are simply not fitting. Sexual behavior, of course, that's outside the will of God is certainly in that category. Here, as Paul says, there's some things that are not fitting. He describes the lowest state of fallen man. When we think about somebody doing something that's low, how's that or bad or really awful? How do we describe that with the word low? How do we use the word low to describe something which is especially awful? It was a low... Well, I was thinking using the word low. All right, that would be one example. It was a low blow. Bad enough to hit me, but boy, he really hit me where it hurts. That was a low blow. What else might be a way that we use low? This was the lowest of the low. Well, once again, that's probably not literal, but it's another way of saying you have really gone to the bottom as far as what you were doing. These people, they went against what the basic duties and responsibilities of mankind were. Let that settle in for a second. God says that mankind has some basic duties and responsibilities. These people said we're not going to have any part of it. Can you think of a time where people have some basic duties and responsibilities in life? Not in the spiritual realm. Basic duties, basic responsibilities. Where do we see it?
Work.
All right. At least this is the minimum that we expect. I mean, you better at least show up, and you better at least stay there, and, you know, you need to maybe sort this many parts, or you need to punch this many parts out of the machine. This is the bare minimum if you want to stay employed. What else? The bare minimum.
Your home.
All right. And how so in the home?
Well, all kinds of things.
A couple examples?
Well, food has to be prepared, and it would be nice if you did laundry occasionally.
Okay.
Not even going to mention cleaning.
All right. If your job is the cook, whether you're the mom or the dad or maybe you are... Yeah, there is that. There are some basic responsibilities. That might mean ensuring that you have food, having food on the table on a regular basis, not just once a month, those kinds of things. God says there are some basic responsibilities of mankind, and the Gentiles wanted no part of that. There's a question I think that can be asked in, and that is, why did the people behave in this way? He says these people, they refuse to have God on the knowledge. God gave them up to a reprobate mind to do the things which are not fitting. Why would people behave in that kind of way? Well, let's look at the question from a secular standpoint. Why would people refuse or reject the responsibilities, the basic responsibilities in the home or work?
Illness?
Well, that would be a positive, or that would be a reasonable or a good reason not to do that. But let's focus on the negative. Why? Why not fulfill your essential responsibilities? Tim?
Well, some people are just lazy.
All right. That would be one example. You know, here's somebody who simply is not motivated enough to do what needs done. They're lazy. I'm not going to do it. Can that be true in the spiritual realm? Sure. God says do this, I'm just not really interested in doing that.
A lack of knowledge. Sometimes we don't have the total knowledge. We may have been given the knowledge, but we've never really expounded on that.
Yeah. Now, if you looked at that from the standpoint that Julie was talking about a minute ago, okay, we're going to help you. But what about these people? They had the knowledge and they said, we don't want it. We want something else. Carol? Okay. People have decided that they're going to do some things or pursue a way of life that is completely contrary to the basic responsibilities in life, both spiritually and physically. Tim, back to you.
Well, the Bible is largely a book of rules, and those rules curtail what a lot of people want to do, and they just don't want those rules stepping on their toes. Mm-hmm. They want to do what they want to do, and none of us have seen God, so a lot of people get it in their head that, well, I've never seen him. He's not really there. I can do what I want. There's not going to be any, I have known a couple of people that were in the church that I don't know what they were doing when the word was being preached, but they thought that when their life was over here, it was over. That was it. And that's a word. Weren't you listening?
Yeah.
All these years?
Self-will. The Bible talks about self-will, and it doesn't talk about it in a positive way. Another key word that I want to bring to our attention is the word refuse. Anybody ever here work a job where perhaps in a factory environment your job was testing a product or testing a part to make sure that it passed or it failed or passed? Anybody have a job like that? Okay, a few of us have, or at least we're familiar with the process. The idea behind refused here would be, let's say that you are the inspector on a line. All these parts are coming down, and your job is to inspect each part. We've seen that on furniture. We've seen the inspection stickers on clothing, different products that we buy inspected by Inspector 6 or whatever that might be. What if you are the inspector? You're doing your job, and you determine that a part is faulty. What's probably generally going to be the process?
Pull it.
All right, you pull it, you set it aside, you set off the alarm, you do something to say, this is something that's not right. Here, as you look at this word refuse, it has the idea of testing something. In this case, testing who or what? Who they refuse, or what do they refuse? God. Now, if you know what I told you a minute ago, you're testing something, evaluating something, determining whether or not something is good or bad. If you have done that with God, and you're putting which stamp on God? Reject or accept?
Reject.
How often? Every single time. You have made that decision. How do you think God's going to feel about that? He's going to reject you. Think about that. Here is the person who simply doesn't ignore God or say, I don't want knowledge about God. Here is the person who says, I have come to an understanding of God and I do not want him. Well, guess what? You reject God, and who are you pushing the accept lever for? It's going to be the devil every single time. Did God allow these people to reject him? Absolutely, because we have free will or free choice. The people had a full knowledge of God, and that's what's expressed by the word knowledge. Anything that you want to discuss before we start with Romans 1, 29 down through verse 31? Let's go there. He says, and you can see how this builds on what we were just talking about. If you have rejected God, you're probably going to be filled, and one source defines filled as stuffed. I like that. Let's just use the word stuffed there. These people were stuffed with what? Not just unrighteousness, probably, at least in some translations. What's it say?
All.
Okay, I don't know if all was in your version or not, Carol. Okay, it was. It's one thing to say, well, he's an unrighteous person. But when you come along and you say that this person is stuffed with all unrighteousness, what's it sound like?
Nothing good, isn't
it? Yeah. Haven't we heard the expression sometimes, there is not a good bone where?
In his body.
We hear that, and you might wonder, well, can that literally be true? Well, Romans 1 says, yeah, it is. You can stuff yourself with so much evil, it's like you're a walking cousin to the devil. Steve, do you have a thought? Or you just... Okay, just want to make sure. It didn't take the Gentiles very long to fill up their lives and their minds with sin. Paul, to help illustrate that, begins to list various sins. Now, he probably could have listed several others, but he lists 23 different sins, almost two dozen sins. A short definition is going to be offered for each one on the sheet that you have, plus we want to see if we can offer some points of application. I've suggested a couple. We'll see if we can offer some more as the class goes through. There have been some commentators who have tried to categorize these sins. I'll give you this very quickly. It suggests that the first four, with the exception of fornication, and I'll give a reason for that in just a minute, refer to injustices with respect to the well-being and the properties of others. Think about how relevant that is to society right now for us. No respect, no regard for the well-being and the properties of others. You can see that sometimes with the police in how they deal with people. If not in this country, other places. You can see that in grocery stores. The next five are going to be injustices, which we harm the person of our neighbor. It used to be that people thought good things about their neighbor. Not anymore. I mean, your next door neighbor might be somebody that has it in for you. The next six are dispositions of the mind centering in pride. If you think about sin for a second, how often do we find sin associated with pride? Can you link some? Can you connect some sins to pride? Well, what about the person who says, boy, I've got so much money? Well, he might. But what also seems to be peeking its head out there? I'm okay, or pride. I feel powerful. I've got pride there. Where else do we see sin connected with pride? What about the gay pride movement? You find some people, and it's not necessarily just same-sex relationships, you find people who will boast about their exploits. Boy, let me tell you what I did. What about when it comes to drinking? You ever see pride associated with a bottle? How? Yes. I never drank so much in my life. Everybody else was passed out under the table an hour earlier. But I managed. Well, a lot of us have. And you can go off in one direction and talk about the liquor. That's perfectly fine. But what about the pride aspect of it? Boy, I got angry and I really told him. Well, all right. We're focused on the anger, but what else is seeping out there? Pride. Look what I did. Pride, again, again, and again. It's therefore no wonder that when God talks about things that he hates, pride is on that particular list. Anything you want to add to us before we start looking at the words? All right, what's word number one? Unrighteousness. As Thayer defined this word, he says it is unrighteousness where? Both in the heart and in the life. Now, you would expect that if unrighteousness is in the heart, where is it going to naturally be found as well? It's going to be found in life. From the heart, you begin to find what a person is truly like. A source defined this as a comprehensive term. He says it includes all the following sins. You can then see sort of a golden thread that you can trace from this sin all the way down. And as I mentioned at the beginning of class, you can also trace that thread back up through the earlier section of Romans chapter 1. But this is really what spawns all the other sins. It is a heart which has been so tainted, so foul. It's like, and we gave this illustration a couple of weeks ago, if you can go to the fountainhead of a river, for example, and even though that river may branch out in 15 or 20 different places, if you were to follow it down in all the different places, if you truly foul the head, then when you look at all those 15 or 20 different little areas, what are you going to find? They're also going to be contaminated. Now, they may not be nearly as contaminated as what you're going to find right there at the head, but the head affects everything else. There are a lot of people who do not believe that. Also, as you look at this word, as far as unrighteousness, it describes sins of thought, sins of word, sins of deed. I would say that those are the three main categories and perhaps the only three categories of sin. It's easy to look at various deeds and say, well, that's a sin. It's maybe a little harder for some people to see sin when it comes to thought. They would say, well, I only thought it. I didn't do anything. That could be true, but that still doesn't make it right. And certainly when it comes to word, that's something that reasonable people can see. They can say, yeah, I said that, and I should not have done that. As we mentioned earlier, some of the sins are against self. Some of the sins are against the neighbor. Then this other little point that we've not looked at yet. Some sins, as we think about them, they're located where? Inward. What would be some inward sins? Inward sins.
Could you have a specific one? Or
sure, let's draw some. Or if you want to answer in a different way, that's okay.
I was just going to say inward are ones that aren't visible to other people.
Okay. So what's not visible to other people as far as a sin?
Thoughts. Thoughts.
All right. Let's be a little more specific. What kinds of thoughts? Carol, and then we'll take Tim.
Okay, you can see somebody walking down the street and they've got on a pretty dress and you, oh, that's pretty, but inside you're thinking, oh, why did she have that? I don't, or something like that.
Okay. Envy, and I don't know if that second part would be bitterness. I'm not sure exactly what the best word would be there.
Jealousy.
Okay, envy, jealousy. Maybe a little resentment, but yes, you have a mixture of multiple things, and it could be multiple sins as far as when we think about inward sin. Well, instead of it being this or that, it might have been be they or them, plural. Tim?
I was just thinking, it says in the book that if a man commits adultery in his heart, which it's really talking about his mind there, then he's done it. I mean, might as well have done it physically because...
It's the moral equivalent. Yeah. So you do have sexual thoughts that can fall into the realm of sin. What about anger? Somebody says, boy, I saw red. Really? How's that work? No, you didn't see red, but what happened? I blew my top. Well, no, not literally. You still got it. But I know exactly what you're thinking as far as the angry thoughts that were going. Or somebody else says, I bit my tongue. Now, that might be literal, but generally when I hear people say, I bit my tongue, their tongue is still fine. Anybody else as far as unrighteousness? Let's take a look at number two. He talks about fornication. We know that word, or should know that word, the difference between fornication and adultery. Anybody recall what it is? Adultery is... All right, and adultery involves someone who is married, being unfaithful to the spouse. Fornication means... All right, fornication is that broad word. You could be married. Can you be married and commit fornication? Yes, because fornication describes every possible sexual sin. Doesn't,
what verse are you on, Brad?
Huh?
What verse are you on?
If you go back to Romans 1, this should be starting with verse 29, Don.
Yeah,
being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness. I hadn't gotten there quite yet. Remember, as I was going through the classifications, I said I'd come back to fornication. I'm coming back to that now. You're not going to necessarily find that in all Bible translations. Not everyone has it. And that's due to a manuscript variation. If it's not there, I don't see that as an issue because what did we talk about last week? I mean, it was there in detail. So, like I say, some manuscripts you can find it there. Some translations will have it and some will not. Number three, what do we have?
Wickedness.
I don't hear wickedness being a word that people use too often. Maybe I run in the wrong circles. Anybody hear the word wicked or wicked too often? All right, Bonnie, anybody else? I'm not sure why that is. Maybe we're in the wrong part of the country. When I do hear the word, though, wicked, maybe it's just me, but boy, I mean, that sounds pretty bad. When somebody says that was wicked behavior, my ears kind of perk up like, oh, okay, well, that must have been pretty awful.
They say that was a wicked wind, you know.
That yes. Severe.
Severe,
that kind of thing. Yeah, well, maybe we become so desensitized to sin that we just use it for the weather. But I just do not hear people using the word wicked very often in conjunction with behavior. Other definitions which would probably be less known to us would be baseness and maliciousness. Sinfulness is certainly very popular. This word, as you think of it, describes doing harm to someone. Next page, at least for me, the active, the deliberate will to corrupt and to inflict injury. What comes to mind when you think about that? I'm sorry.
Going back to the wicked, I think you hear malicious a lot of the time more than you hear wicked.
Yes, I would agree, at least for the people that I hear or the things that I read. Someone says, well, that was malicious. If I were to put the words two side by side, though, at least in my mind, and this might be a personal thing, wicked sounds to me to be worse than malicious. Maybe that's just because I hear malicious more, but that is probably going to be the more common word. When you think about this kind of behavior, where do we see it? What illustrates it? Wicked, evil, base, malicious behavior, wanting to inflict injury on somebody. Okay, that wasn't where my mind was, but that certainly is a good one. When you take typically young girls and, you know, basically they're sold into the sex trade, or sometimes as a household servant, but I think the sex trade is probably going to be a lot more popular. And you're thinking, how could you do that to somebody who's 12, 13, 14, 15 years old? That would be an excellent illustration for that. Thank you. What else, Ray? And then Brian.
There was one on the news recently where a mother just really done some bad things to her infant child. Black eyes.
Yeah.
Feeding on the child. Not feeding the child. That's wickedness from the mother.
It is. I mean, anymore, if the child's taken to the emergency room, it seems like doctors are always especially careful to say, tell me exactly how it happened, did the injuries line up with the report and so forth. But there have been multiple cases where young children, you know, anywhere from under a year old to maybe 3, 4, 5, go in with broken bones and fractures. And sometimes, you know, they were just shaken or dropped or, you know, beaten maliciously in a wicked way. We do see that not only with the teenage population, but also sometimes with people who are certainly in the very, very, very preteen years. Brian, and then Don, and then we'll take Tim.
I think of like what they call xenophobia, where you're afraid of anybody that doesn't think like me, doesn't look like me, like with racism, and the thoughts that people have about other races.
Yeah. That's, again, going in a much different direction than I was mentally, but that's another great illustration of Paul's point. Thank you. Don?
Wickedness can be more than just physical, right? It can be verbal.
It could. Yeah. You find sometimes if you talk to people who have been verbally abused or assaulted, that they would say, I would have taken 10 beatings compared to the verbal abuse. You can probably find some wives who have been verbally abused who would make that same point. The verbal abuse was so bad, I finally had to get out. I could have withstood, and maybe I did withstand some physical beatings, but the verbal assaults were just something I could not take. But they can be just as horrific. Did you have a follow-up there or not? Okay, Tim, to you.
I was just thinking about abortion. You know, the Bible says that God hates those who
shed innocent blood.
Inflict pain on the innocent. I can't think of a more innocent being than an infant, especially one that's not even born yet.
Yeah,
a little more than half of this country think it's okay to murder these kids.
Yeah, we just keep dropping things down. I mean, you can start with where Betty was, and you can go to the age group that Ray was talking about, and now you get to pre-birth, and they are certainly wicked. And I don't want to say that trafficking a 14-year-old is worse than abortion, but you can almost see a progression there. Bad enough to do something to a teen, unthinkable to do something to a child who is 6 months or a year, and then when you go down to the pre-birth time and you say, let's destroy the child, you just have to say you're not thinking correctly. Someone or something has completely warped and twisted and virtually destroyed the correct thought process in you.
Yeah. Actual breathing child.
Yeah. But when you have a preemie who's born at 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, you do everything to save him. I mean,
and then you say you can abort after that.
Yeah.
You just cannot argue that logically. But you are right. They will say whatever it takes. I have not looked at this in any depth, but I do know in Roe v. Wade, the lady that eventually came forward, you know, who was used and finally came forward and said, look, I repent, I'm a Christian. There was a news story that broke within the last week, and supposedly she recanted. I saw that, and then I saw some additional information that said there is more to the story, let's play the whole clip. Now, if there really is more to the story, if her quote-unquote conversion was actually genuine, then that would be, I think, a great illustration of just how evil those people are. They took a shred of truth or a piece of information, made it out to be one thing, which it wasn't. So I don't know exactly.
The story I read claimed that she confessed to the taking money from
the pro-life.
Pro-life people. The pro-life people to say she had changed her mind.
Yeah. There's apparently more to the story, though. At least that's the last that I got.
That's the last I had heard.
Yeah. But, as I say, if there is more to the story, and the people overlook that to put out a contrary narrative, again, you are in the wicked category for sure. Stan, we saw you, and then Tim, we'll go back to you.
It's interesting. You just used this word, but when you talked about wickedness being a word that we don't use very often, and yet it was the first thing I thought of when I saw that is the word evil, and we very seldom use that word anymore. But to me, when you get to the wicked category, you're talking about something that's truly evil.
Yeah. Our society, and I'm thinking of America, in many respects, seems to reserve evil for mass murderers. No, really. Unless when you get to somebody who has, you know, done a school shooting, or, I mean, the body count is probably about more than three, then they'll come out and say that's evil. But unless you're in that realm, a lot of times they don't want to use that word. Well, it was bad, and this is a terrible tragedy, and it's awful. But to say that something is evil, it's almost like you have to reach out with a wrench and pull the tongue out of the mouth to get him to say that word. And that's so sad. The Bible is so plain that there is evil. We've even had so many debates in this country as far as whether or not evil actually exists. How people can come to that point where they would ask that question. Satan's got to be laughing all the way home.
Is it possible that people tie evil to Satan? People can't be evil. I mean, yeah, they can go so far as to be, they'd be wicked, they could be bad, they can be terrible, horrible, whatever, but only Satan could be evil in the minds of a lot of people.
Perhaps that's the thinking. I do know that that is a word that some simply seem completely adverse to using. Bonnie?
To me, it's the dumbing down, desensitizing of the American people. It's a slow process, and that's why you don't hear this stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's the dumbing down of society, to me. Mm-hmm. Desensitizing.
Yeah.
Everything's okay, whether it's okay or not.
So that you will accept evil for good.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's really, I think, where it ultimately comes to. You take evil, you redefine it. Isaiah talked about that back in Isaiah 5. It's about verse 20, I believe. And when a society gets to that point, and that's about where the Gentiles were. They were calling evil good, good evil. And you really need some strong preaching to help turn things around. The other one that was on my mind was drive-by shootings. When you have people who can go through a neighborhood and just start firing randomly at houses, and we've had one member here that has actually had that kind of experience. The fright, the terror, the deaths, the injuries that come from that kind of thing, how can you possibly do that? That is just completely beyond my mind, or walking into a church building or walking into a school and trying to assassinate as many kids as you can. That's evil plus plus. There are people, though, that do have that kind of mindset, and it's nothing short of demonic. I was saddened, I guess, a little surprised. I hadn't expected that. But was it Baltimore when we were going through the pandemic and they were concerned about the hospitals and whether or not they were going to have enough ventilators? I believe it was the mayor of Baltimore and maybe a couple of the mayors as well that said, please stop the shootings. We need the hospital space for virus people, not shooting victims.
Yeah, I heard that. I can't remember what city it was.
Now, can you imagine a mayor going on TV and having to make that statement? Stop shooting people so we can have hospital beds for COVID-19 people. That's where we are as a nation. Next, covetousness. We've heard about that a lot. Simple definition for it from Thayer is a greedy desire to have more, covetousness, avarice. Quote, this spirit pursues its own interests with complete disregard for the rights of others and even for the considerations of common humanity. When you look at the book of Ephesians, Paul uses that same word. We find that covetousness is not restricted to money. It is that insatiable desire to have more and more and more. How do we see that playing out in our country? Covetousness.
$1 million homes, more than $1 million homes.
Okay. I got this. I want a second one or a third one, and now I'll get one, my beachfront property, over somewhere else. What else, Steve?
You look over the neighbor's yard and you see all the toys they've got over there, and I got to have that and then something in the bed.
Yeah.
Their house is, I like their house, my house choices.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. It kind of starts out, if they have it, I want one. And then, well, they've got the nice model, I'll get the deluxe model. And that is a temptation for all of us. Don, did you have a thought? I thought somebody started to flash a hand by you.
I did flash a hand, but covetous has been with us since, well, can they? So, I can't see, of course, like this, increase, any of these have been increasing, that would cause a big alarm. Now, they're bad. I'm saying that. But I think we can't take these and put a blanket over everybody like in the United States. And this is running rapid, but I can't see it running rapid.
Well, I think when you use the word rampant, that would certainly not be the position that we're in. We still have thousands of people, to use the words of Paul in Romans chapter 11, who have not bowed the knee to Baal. In Romans 11, Paul talks about 7,000 people who had not bowed the knee to Baal. That is, they had not given themselves over to false religion and evil ways. We have that today. We've still got more than 7,000 people in our nation. But we do have several people, and going through what I was talking about with the shootings and what we talked about with abortion and what we talked about with kids under about five and the teenagers and so forth, we do have several examples of what we see here. Hopefully, that tide is stemmed by God's people. But it can get to the point, obviously in the U.S., we can get to a point where things would be much, much worse. We do not want to leave the impression that that's where we are as a nation. But at the same time, I don't think that we want to paint the picture that things are so rosy here that we don't see examples of these problems either. So that's kind of my hope, to try to strike a balance here. Yeah, but that still doesn't change the hearts. You can change the law, and if you have half the people in a country who support abortion, that is a problem. That's a moral problem.
Yeah, it won't change by becoming unlawful to abortion.
But you can help stem some of the bloodshed.
Yeah.
And hopefully change some minds. If it is not legal, that will likely deter at least some people. Stan, were you thinking, or are you going to comment?
Well, this is off the subject a little bit, but you made the comment that we can stem the tide. I thought it was interesting that, you know, just a few days ago I heard on the news that there was at least one good thing about COVID-19. It was keeping the people that are coming up from Mexico and Central America out of the United States, and they gave the numbers, and the numbers were way off compared to what they were. So something that we've been looking at as being kind of bad has stemmed the tide, and that was all relative to to the amount of drugs that are coming into the states, how it had chopped off the amount of drugs to the extent that some of the street value of the drugs that were coming in had just skyrocketed.
Mm-hmm. As a side point to that, think about covetousness. Remember, it's that desire to have more and more. In terms of illegal immigration, do we see it there? You're in a country, job prospects are not good, limited food, poor health care, and just across the border, what do you have? There's that beacon of light. There is the United States of America. Do people, well, what do we have? What's the word in government speak for the people who want to come? They are the, you're going to probably do it here in about 6 hours. Go to sleep, and what do you do?
Dreamers.
The dreamers. I knew if we gave you enough hints, you'd get it. There are dreamers. Well, what are they dreaming about? Yeah, well, there's probably that. But let's get over to America. We can have a new life, and hopefully we can get some free stuff. But we will be able to leave this behind. And that is their desire. That is their hope. There are some people, they spend years sometimes pursuing an education. So they will have a degree which will be useful in the U.S. and that will increase their chance of immigration. That it? Maliciousness. Let's talk about it. Malignity is one definition. Malice, ill will, a desire to injure. This term describes a man who is destitute of every quality which would make him good. The word typifies the wide range of wicked behaviors that oppose godly living and righteousness. Let's focus in on that definition. A man who is destitute of every quality that would make him good. Do we ever see that in society? As Don said, that may not be something that we see on maybe a large scale, but do we see it at all? Destitute of every quality that would make him good. All right, I think you have some people who have some psychological issues. That's not what Paul is talking about here, obviously, because he's talking about people who sin. They are certainly accountable, but that's what comes to mind. You have a person who has no conscience. You have a person who has no feeling. There's a person who has no regrets. They talk about the cold-hearted killer. You think about the person, and they say, well, you know, did you kill him? Yeah, just went up and bang, and then, you know, I went home and went to sleep. Well, okay, that's a problem. Don?
Well, you said a few words back of drive-by shootings.
Yeah.
Well, some TV programs, they basically gangs. And there are so people in those gangs are so indoctrinated that they have their people, the whole of the cost of people. You wonder if even they would not stop killing their mother and father or their siblings the way they talk. And in prison, they talk the same way. There's no remorse at all.
Yeah. 2 points there, and you made a great comment, and I'm going to develop them in just a couple of different ways. When you think about people in prison, would you find possibly some people who would fall into this category? People who are destitute of every quality which would make them good.
Yes.
There are sometimes lifers, and they qualify there. Saw an interesting story today. I probably would have disregarded it had it not been brought to mind by Don, but there is a veteran cemetery right now. And in the veteran cemetery, they've got two grave markers with Nazi symbolism on them. And that really bugs the people who go out there to the cemetery thinking, that's just not appropriate. Well, because of how the VA and the government works, it looks like that's going to be kind of tough to undo. Connecting to that, what I've read about the Nazis in the concentration camps, there was no mercy. If you want to talk about people who were ruthless, if you want to talk about people who were brutal, if you want to talk about people who showed zero mercy, it was the SS guards. And someone says, well, we don't have those today in our country. Well, thankfully not. But it is possible for people to have that kind of mindset where I have no good bone in my body. There have been people who have said, people like Himmler, when he went home, I found it odd sometimes that they would say, well, he was a great family man. And I'm kind of thinking, how could you do what you do for 8, 10, 12 hours a day and then go home and play with the kids and the dog and, comfort your wife at night? It just never made any sense. But maybe that's in the sociopath category that Marcia mentioned.
Right. We had in this country some of those prison guards from Germany
yeah.
that was living in this country. and eventually they were talked about being very malicious or wicked people.
Yeah. They do serve as a good illustration of a kind of a thing that can happen to a person. And you have to step back a little bit and say, why were they like that? Was it just that they were crazy from the get-go?
Indoctrination.
Yeah.
Power.
Well, both of those things. Power can corrupt people, but also the indoctrination. I don't know exactly what it took to become an SS guard, but I don't think that they were looking for the fellas who, you know, were going to be the Walmart door greeters. They were looking for the people who could be absolutely ruthless. Stan?
Two separate things. One, just recently they talked about some of the prisons being open to allow people out that wouldn't ordinarily be, so that they had root or they didn't have to deal with the virus thing. And one particular incident I'm thinking of, they let out a person who had killed before, and he turned right around and did the same thing once he was out. So I think there are others besides Nazis that are of that mindset. The other thing, something that we don't talk about, but it exists anyway, our military, especially in times of war, teaches soldiers to kill. Mm-hmm. And to make it a short story, they come back to the United States, and then the question is asked, how can you expect them not to act on what they've been trained to do? So it happens under what we think are conditions that are acceptable. People are trained sometimes to be killers.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how many people saw the Rambo movies, but if you saw at least one, you think about what's pictured there, and if you look at special forces, how those guys are trained, I mean, you're sending in a small team to enemy territory, and, you know, obviously the first rule is get in and get out, don't get caught, but the second rule has got to be, if you need to kill, don't hesitate. Be quick, be silent, and don't think twice. There are some divisions of the government that are set up that way. And, I mean, that's tough to think about, but it is possible to train the mind to do those very things. The mind can be impressioned to do all kinds of good and bad things. Is there a final thought? I thought somebody was raising a hand. I didn't want to miss you. Okay, looks like that's going to finish it up tonight. Let's pick up, Lord willing, with envy next week. If you would, bring the sheet back, please. Thank you.